Welcome back to the Wise Divine Woman podcast. And today again, I have Dr. Diane Mueller, and she today is talking about Lyme disease. Many of you have heard about it. It's certainly has become more publicly aware, as in the like just in the last 10 years. Before that, it was like kind of poo-pooed or foo-fooed off, as it wasn't being justified and symptomatically wasn't being justified. And people were thought of as being crazy. So I know I've met many people with Lyme, a lot of new research with that, even genetically speaking, maybe. And so, Diane, welcome back to the show. It's such a pleasure having you. I know we had a great conversation about libido and hormones, our last talk.
Well, thank you for having me. I had the best time meeting you. It was so lovely. I'm very, very happy to be back here again and having this really important conversation, because like you said, there's this genetic component. It's a very confusing thing, and there's so many more famous people these days that are speaking out about Lyme illness and Lyme disease that I think it's starting to gain more, just like more a higher level of awareness of human consciousness that this is a problem. But people are still not oriented to as to like when we need to think about this and really how do we think about this as being a problem? Why do we do this? So it's a really important conversation. So I really appreciate you having me here today.
It is so important because so many people are suffering with debilitating symptoms. Sometimes the probiotic or the current medical protocol works, and sometimes it doesn't work. And so tell us a little bit about Lyme and tell us what you're doing with it.
Yeah, so Lyme disease is a bacteria infection, right? So it's the name of the disease caused by an infection called Borrelia, most commonly Borrelia burgdorferi. And that's just a fancy name for a bug, for a bacteria. And so essentially, most people have heard of this and they think about ticks. And that's the most common way the delivery system for essentially this bacteria entering our body is a tick bite. But there's very, very limited study. There's one study that actually is showing fleas and another study showing mosquitoes that actually carry this. So now we know that it's like not just tick bites. And we used to think that this was only like this area in the United States, like in the, New England states, those northeastern states. And now we're seeing it, that's not true. It's across the United States, it's worldwide. This is something that we really need to be considering. And a reason for that that's very wild is there's like some of these birds, songbirds in particular, will actually carry in their intestinal tract. They will actually carry infected larvae of these ticks and they fly over the world. And that's part of how it is actually spreading, from an international level. So we really need to get away from this whole, I've never been bitten by a tick. I don't live in these states. And something you said earlier, I think is super important in this conversation around like, oh, something like a probiotic and doesn't make somebody feel better. A very, very common reason to think of something like Lyme is if you've been to a doctor, you know something's off. Maybe you feel fatigued, or maybe you have pain or chronic headaches, brain fog, you're like forgetting stuff a lot. And you go to the doctor and they run a bunch of tests and they're like, everything's fine. And you try some of those basics, right? Maybe you've cleaned up your diet. Maybe you take a probiotic, like you said. Maybe you work on supporting your adrenals with some lovely herbs like ginseng and licorice and rhodiola and all these basic things. And you're like, it's not working. My lab tests are normal. And unfortunately, oftentimes when this happens in standard of care, unfortunately, we're often diagnosed with this like psychiatric type of condition and told that it's in our head. And so if listeners can take one thing home from our time together today, Dana, like I really hope what they will take home is trusting your intuition. And if your lab test says that it's normal and you feel like it's not normal, it's not normal. It's just that the answer has not been found yet. And in many of these scenarios where it's like you feel bad, the symptoms are widespread, you're doing the basics, nothing's working, labs are normal, that's a really good time to consider Lyme disease.
I think sometimes the doctors don't know what to do with Lyme, and it may get brushed under the carpet of autoimmune or thyroid, or, you know, just again, like you said, stress management, and you'll get prescribed some depression medication. So it is one of those really difficult things. And I firmly believe you are your best advocate. And if you're not feeling well, you're not feeling well. And we really need to trust that. Absolutely. Absolutely. So do what testing models are you using, or are you just following like the new sort of bioidentical approach to things now, where maybe testing is not working and we're working off of symptomology? So how are you approaching and testing Lyme?
Thank you for this question. It's so, so, so important, because one of the things that I see people when, you know, and hear about when people hear conversations like this is like, okay, well, I'm just going to go and get the standard Lyme test and maybe my insurance will cover it. And that's a reasonable starting point, because if it is positive, it's going to be a positive test.
Right.
But the problem is, if it's negative, it's basically doesn't, it's meaningless. And one of the reasons for this is a couple of different reasons, but one of the reasons is there are, so this bacteria that causes Lyme, this Borrelia, most commonly it's the type of Borrelia, it's a species of Borrelia called Borrelia burgdorferi that we classically say is Lyme disease. But bacteria have a lot of brothers and sisters, right? They have these other species that are like pretty much they're the same as them, but slightly different, right? Genetically super similar. And so there's all these other species of Borrelia that for all intents and purposes can cause all the same symptoms. And so the what's being ordered lab test right now standardly is really just looking for Borrelia burgdorferi. And if you have one of Borrelia's like sibling species, Borrelia miyamotai, Borrelia epizeli, all these other types of Borrelia, you can actually have all of the same symptoms, but the standard test is going to be negative. So I use a company called Vibrant Wellness for testing. I my personal feeling, and I make $0 from saying this, is that I think they're the best on the market. That's why I recommend them, is purely just out of love and appreciation for what they're doing as a lab company, because they will test for all these different species of Borrelia. And then part two, since I said there was two parts of this answer, is that remembering that when insects bite us, they don't just give us one thing. Like if they have a bunch of different things in them, they will give the entire, you know, cocktail of everything they're carrying, right? So if they're carrying tick bites us and it's carrying 15 different microorganisms, they're going to pass all 15 of those to us. And maybe we clear a few of them, maybe we don't, but we want to make sure that we're testing for all these other types of insect-borne infections, oftentimes in the Lyme world called co-infections, but they're really just other infections that are transmitted via insects. And that's another reason why I really am supportive of Vibrant's technology and their lab testing, is because it's so thorough as far as really looking for these very, very common insect-borne pathogens, so that we're not just looking at Lyme. We're actually considering for, you know, arthritis, you know, autoimmune disease, like you mentioned, for any type of symptom that we don't know the cause. It's such a broader picture of all the infections that could be playing a role. Yeah.
It's so important, right? Because there are different methods of approach and treatment and therapies for those ideas. And cofactoring, while your one can be, you know, calm, the cofactors are having a party all by themselves. So it is a whole picture. And probably the same way as you approach hormone health and libido, it is a full mind body movement and nutrition approach, because if you're not managing stress, then everybody joins the party. Doesn't matter what it is. And especially with Lyme. So how do you approach someone with Lyme? So if someone contacts you, how is it? And I love the book, It's Not In Your Mind. You're not crazy. It is real, right? So
yeah, that's the reason for the book title, right? Is because it is what I hear most commonly by people that make their way to my office. Because it's very common, people come to my office after seeing a dozen or more different practitioners, and nobody has figured out why they are the way they are. And even if they haven't been told, it's in their mind, there is a level of self-doubt that can creep in around, like, nobody's finding anything wrong. Like, am I making it up, right? And so there's that level of, you know, it's like the name of your podcast is like the wise woman, I think is so brilliant for this conversation. I mean, for so many reasons, but fits into our conversation so well, right? Because it's like that wise part inside of us, like we're talking about her. I'm like, okay, it's not in my mind. And so then the approach is essentially first, like, you know, do lab testing. And the reason I like lab testing as compared to just like, let's treat symptoms, it's not that it's a wrong approach. We all have like our personal ways we do things. But the reason I personally and professionally like the idea of lab testing is I want to know if it's Borrelia Lyme. I want to know if it's Bartonella. I want to know if it's Ehrlichia. I want to know if it's Epstein-Barr, right? I want to know what we're working on from a level of being able to tailor treatment a little better, right? So that's the big thing there. But while we're lab testing, one of the other things I tend to work on it, and from a lab testing perspective, it's not just about testing Lyme and the co-infections. It's also about looking at the adrenals, looking at the thyroid, running tests for micronutrients, looking at sex hormones, because all of these are the basic building blocks. And when we have infections or we have toxic overload, like from mold toxins, for example, the way I describe it to people is these scenarios are energetically expensive. And what I mean by that is in order to try to combat Lyme, in order to try to combat infections or toxins, we are burning through so many nutrients to just try to survive. Right. So it's really taking a lot of energy, right? So in order to get these things out, we need to start replenishing this. We need to start building the adrenals, building the thyroid, building the reserves through micronutrient work, building the sex hormones so that the body has literally those building blocks necessary to kill, to detox, to all, do all those things. So we do want to go after the Lyme. We do want to go after the infections. We do want to eradicate toxins, but we also want to make sure that we're really building the body up. So there's literally the stamina to go through the treatment. So it's really looking at all of those things.
It's so important, right? It is that foundation, regardless if you're to support the immune system in anything that approaches you and anything that attacks you and that challenges your body at all times, right?
Yes.
In your research and studies, are you finding that the Epstein-Barr kind of aspect really plays a high role with things, or do you find that people who have had mono are more susceptible to Lyme?
I haven't seen like a direct relationship, I would say, where like mono makes somebody more susceptible to Lyme. And really, like in testing, and a lot of my patients we test for mono, there's so many people that have had mono that don't even realize it, right? So there's so many people that clear it and maybe it felt like a flu or a cold or something. They don't even realize it. But it really is, when I test for it, it really is I would say it's different, but I would say it's probably less than 0.25% of the people that have Lyme. So I definitely don't think it's like a huge predisposing factor. I would say more in general, like less about the Epstein-Barr and more like having immunodysregulation is really what I would say the predisposing factor is. And that maybe that's from Epstein-Barr possibly, but it's also from living in a moldy home. It's also from a super stressful lifestyle. It's also from emotional dysregulation that can come from, you know, so many different things, right? So there's all these different fundamental things that I would say go into the immunodysregulation, and we can put Epstein-Barr as one of those things. So it's not to say it's not a player, but the way I tend to find it in my observation is that it's more of like all of these different things together from an immune dysregulation place really set the stage for a Lyme to say take over.
So how are they finding, so you're saying it's just not from ticks. So it can be from mosquitoes, which makes perfect sense to me because mosquitoes bite animals, same as the ticks. They have a process, a life cycle, and then they bite us. Same as like West Nile, same aspect, right? So it's not surprising. And I'm glad the research is starting to come up with that. So how do you combat that? How are you looking at from a prevention? Do you look at it, is DEET worse than having the bite? Or how are we going to approach this coming summer, right? Especially with the increase. Sometimes I find the increase of mosquito depending on the dampness of the weather and the weather changes. How are we looking at this from a preventative point of view?
Yeah, I love this question. It's important, right? And you know, the other thing I want to say going into this is we really need more research on this mosquito thing. This was one study I found, like, you know, do I know, like, okay, is this every mosquito out there that potentially, like, what's causing mosquitoes to get this? There's so much more research needed on this. And that being said, yes, I think it's really important for us to, like, protect ourselves against mosquitoes for people that, like, love hiking and being outdoors, like, protect yourself from ticks. And, you know, it's like in these, some of these ticks even are these little tiny, like, baby ticks. They're not always the deer ticks even that everybody talks about. Some of these ticks look like the size of a pinhead, right? They can bite you. They can fall off. They can infect you. You might not even know it. So there's so many different things we need to think of. So I'm personally not a very big fan of DEETs. You know, I do think,
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, we do have all of the other toxic component of things. So there's various things we can do, such as cistus. Cistus is a great herb you can take internally. It helps to fight Lyme. It actually, there's some studies on cistus and another component called promethium. So promethium is an agent you can actually use on the outside of your clothes, almost like you would use a DEET, but not quite as bad. And it keeps the ticks away. Like, there's studies where, like, workers will go out into fields that are tick endemic, and, like, one has promethium on them and the other doesn't. And it's, like, drastically different, all the ticks that are crawling over the one body versus another. I don't feel like that's practical for most people, though. But I would say for the biggest things, you know, naturally is, like, take cistus on a regular basis. You can get it as a tincture or a tea. Take it internally. That basically is almost like a natural repellent. Use things like your citronella. You can get, you know, citronella beyond citronella candles. They also sell citronella in essential oils and lotions and those kind of things. So I would have a tendency to say, okay, well, let's protect against these bites, but let's use more things like cistus and citronella, you know, for the most part to avoid those things versus the DEET, just because, like, like you're saying, it's we want to be careful, because so much of the problem with these infections isn't really the infection. It is, but it's also our immune system being so overworked. And, you know, and there's a genetic component to that as well. So we don't want to do things like put DEET in our body, which is known to be have all these other problems, because that's not setting us up for, you know, for a very good situation from an immune perspective.
Yeah, our livers are already stressed out enough. Let's,
correct,
you know, support it in that. And I never heard of cysteine, so I think that's amazing.
Cistus.
I love the cystis. Thank you.
Yeah, yes.
Cystis. And I love how it's an internal aspect. And I'm sure there's many other aspects to it as well that are very healthy. So, and I love that, right? Same as, like, sometimes taking garlic works, and sometimes, but again, it's supporting the immune system the way naturally with what's out there in the world and helping to combat that. So tell
correct
us a little bit about It's Not in Your Mind. What is the book about?
Thank you. Yeah. So the book really goes through my 4-step protocol. So it goes through everything from what you should be watching out for. You know, it's like the biggest thing that I think to start from in talking about the book is when you should consider, you know, Lyme or other associated illnesses, mold, co-infections. So we go through that in the book in detail. But the one thing I'll say about that here is, if you have anything that is like, okay, brain fog, fatigue, pain, these things we've talked about, and you're like, it's not coming up on normal labs as far as what it is. There's nothing that you can figure out as far as why this is happening. These are really good times to look at some of these other, you know, reasons, such as Lyme, co-infections, and mold. So that's like, I could list a, you know, symptom list, and I go through that in the book, but it's literally like 100 symptoms long, right? And that's like, well, why? Well, it's because Lyme and these associated diseases have the ability to change our nervous system, right? They have the ability to actually cause so much neurological inflammation. Nerves go through our whole body. They regulate largely, you know, a huge part of everything we do, at least play a role in it. So that's one mechanism that we talk about in the book through which the symptoms are so wide and why the list is so long. So we talk about that. We talk about lab testing, and we go through the you know, the 4-step protocol around building the body up, how to kill, how to detox appropriately, what, you know, what specific protocols I love, how to use them, what to do if it's not working, how to find a good doctor. So, you know, in some ways I look at it as like almost like a survivor's guide around like a step-by-step journey of how to heal when you have these complicated things and you're like, okay, I know there's something wrong. What do I do? That's kind of the purpose of the book.
I love it. And it looks like it's so easy to follow. And of course, they can always set up appointment with you and your team there as well now to yes, be coached definitely. And be processed through and then how to interpret the testing as well. But I love how you have gone beyond and looking for other practitioners in different areas that also have the same training and mindset and belief system when it comes to Lyme and all of its cofactors and illnesses that kind of trail in with this disease. So in your research, Diane, do you find that there's a genetic component to it and can it be passed genetically?
Genetically, so the genetic component is more about the biotoxins that Lyme releases. So Lyme basically, like all microorganisms, when they die, they release toxins that the body has to eliminate. And oftentimes it's the toxins that in part makes us so sick. So we can have a genetic predisposition where those toxins from Lyme have more of a tendency to build up in one person's body. So it's not to say that, you know, that one person is going to get Lyme versus another due to genetics, but the severity of Lyme because of that biotoxin, that toxin buildup. So if somebody has that gene that predisposes them to those toxins building up, they will probably, their symptom picture is probably going to look worse than somebody that is, you know, not that way. So, you know, can we, you know, pass those genes on? Yeah, potentially. The other thing that comes up a lot is, you know, can we pass Lyme sexually or can we pass Lyme like in utero? And so far, you know, there needs to be, this is another area where I just feel like so much more research needs to be done. But so far, what it looks like is the Lyme bacteria can be found in our sexual secretions, but at such a low amount that it's not transmittable that way. Now, in utero, we do believe at this point that it is transmittable from a standpoint of, you know, when somebody is pregnant. So if you find out that you have Lyme and it's like, oh my gosh, like this symptom's been going on forever and I was carrying my child or my children, that can be very, 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 very intense, you know, for moms to hear. And I work with a lot of moms that have gone through that. And the thing to really know if you're listening and you're a mom and you're like, oh my gosh, I hope that didn't happen. Yes, of course, let's hope that didn't happen. And kids are so resilient, right? So like a common symptom I see in kids with, you know, with Lyme is like a tick, right? So those childhood ticks or ADHD is another one. But it's amazing how fast, like when we find Lyme in kids and we treat them, like how fast some of those disorders go away. Mm-hmm. So the way I like to reframe this for moms, if they hear this, is really like, yes, this is obviously not ideal. There's no getting around that. And how amazing is that, you know, you're doing any sort of work and hearing about this and learning about this now when children really are so resilient and we give them these tiny little doses of herbs, they can have their whole world transformed. So it doesn't have to be this like lifelong sentence because, you know, this happened. If it was transmittable, there really are solutions that are incredibly effective for this.
I love that. I love that. And it is the simplicity of things. And I love that herb, the natural things, the way that the world has made it or God has created it to be. Nature has provided us with answers. And again, you always go back to foundation, right? And you're making sure your food, your breath, your stress management, right, is also important. And I just appreciate, honestly, everything you do, Diane. I think it's brilliant. And the book, I can't wait to get my hands on it because I think for my own self, I think my son has this symptoms that are a little off. So it's always very interesting to dig in a little deeper about that and talk with him about that as well. And I know there's so many people in our area here in Ontario they always called it river fever, but I'm pretty sure that it is the tick aspect of things. And now that more research has been out there, so providing this information for people, not just in America, I'm sure this is happening all over the world. That's just called something else. And it is certainly becoming more of a normal conversation when you're talking about Lyme. And therapies are becoming a more normal conversation rather than just jumping into these intense antibiotic protocols, which are necessary at different times in your life and not for the long haul. But I am so thankful to have come across you, Diane, because we've talked about really great topics. And one, where can people find you? And two, what is the biggest thing that you've learned when helping people with Lyme?
Yeah, thank you so much. So easy way to find me. So I have a couple different ways. I have a very easy to remember website, which is solvesickness.com, where you can find my video ebook for free there. So simple, super simple, solvesickness.com. One of the most important things that I find, and one of the biggest things I've learned, you tapped into this just a moment ago when you were talking about the foundations, comes down to the nervous system and the neurological system. Because, you know, this is like a topic that's so, I feel like, hot in medicine, and, you know, people continue to hear this. And so sometimes I think, if, you know, we're hearing this from so many different people, it's like, oh, we better pay attention, right? So what I've seen is the difference in people that get Lyme or these associated diseases and recover and have recurrence of it, where they go backwards, versus get the disease, recover, and stay well. It almost always comes down to the nervous system and their ability to regulate after stressful times, because we all have stress as humans, and it's part of human existence, right? It's colorful life. We go through highs and lows. We all have that. And so we can work to avoid, you know, certain stressors in our life and make different decisions. So we can remove some exterior stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. And other times it just happens. And so the more we can do practices to really transform the way we are relating to stress, the way our mind, you know, so commonly it's like the mind can get into these vicious cycles of processing and regurgitating things. And while that's common, having practices to get out of that and to getting breaking those vicious thought loops, those thought loops oftentimes are one of the key things that sends people into neurological dysregulation, where it's like there's anxiety and depression, or maybe it's just not sleeping well, or maybe it's worry, or maybe it's reactivity or rage or all these different things. Well, what's happening then is the nervous system is sending molecules that tell tissue to break down instead of the tissue to repair and the immune system to stay well. And when we have this history of Lyme, like, one of the silver linings I really like with it is that it allows people to have that extra motivation. Like, for me as a Lyme survivor, I have that extra motivation every day to be like, okay, well, I better do my nervous system work, even if I don't feel like it today, because that's actually preventing me from having recurrence. And that's, you know, that's a huge motivation. So the other website I'll give you, and I have group programs, I have ways of working with people and supporting people nationally and internationally. So you can also find me at mylymedoc.com, and there you'll find information about me, my book, all my programs, working with me, and all that good stuff.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. And so many things to even just to unpack what you just said there, especially for here. The mental health is certainly the buzzword for the year, but it's what brings us to that point of breakdown. And there's so many different steps that get us there. But again, it is just the awareness, pulling out all the tools that you've created in your toolbox and reminding yourself gently every day to do something for your mental health. And I love that. That's so perfect. It's a good reminder, Diane.
Yeah. Thank you, Dana. It's always such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. I look forward to see what's coming down the road. You just never know. I'll make sure we have all of your links and where they can get in touch with you and where they can work with you. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining us today on the Wise Divine Woman podcast.
Bye, everybody.